From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
For more than two decades, most Americans got their news from Tom Brokaw, Peter Jennings, and Dan Rather, but all three have been replaced. In Dan Rather's case, after a 44-year career at CBS News, which included 24 as the CBS Evening News anchor, he's launching a new news program on HDNet. Dan Rather Reports debuts tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Very pleased it brings him back to my show today. Hello. You had covered every national election since 1962 for CBS. Did you miss being there last Tuesday?
Well, first of all, it's good to be here. Good to see you again. And, of course, I missed it. Election nights are always something special. I and the whole CBS team always viewed them as such. But I'll tell you what surprised me, that I did miss doing the broadcast, but I didn't miss that as much as I thought I would. I missed more than I had thought about the camaraderie of the people I worked with. That a newsroom, when it's right, and the CBS newsroom was very right, has a camaraderie that's difficult to describe to anyone on the outside. So I really missed the people on election night.
Although you were a guest commentator on Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert's midterm midtacular, and that must have been a welcome relief in an odd way, because the pressure wasn't all on you.
Well, it was. Although I consider it to be risky business, that both of them, Jon Stewart and Colbert, are very sharp. They're very intelligent people, and you have to be alert the whole time. So while I consider it to be risky business, it turned out well, and I was glad to be on the air for another election night.
And you weren't in a position to be blamed by conservatives for the election results.
Well, that was an added bonus, but there have been years when some on the left side of the political spectrum were unhappy with the results, and they also, looking for someone to blame, sometimes blame the anchor man.
Your description of Hillary Clinton's reelection victory was colorful. She ran away with it like a hobo with a piece of potato pie. And that's right up there with some of your other famous ones. We were on that story quicker than a raven on roadkill. The race is tighter than the rusted lug nuts on a 57 Ford. Can I assume those things were all prepared or things that you'd said before in similar situations?
No. Some were. Many weren't. I grew up in a time and place. The time was the Depression and the World War II years and just after that, among people who worked with their back in their hands in the oil fields. And part of what made the day go by was to think of new ways to describe things. Some would say aphorisms, others would say metaphors. So I grew up in that climate. Some of them came spontaneously, especially on a long election night such as the 2000 election night, who can forget it, and for that matter 2004. You're on the air for so long that some of them just come spontaneously. You know, others were ones that I'd said years ago, and some I just sort of jotted down for election night.
Don't bet the trailer money on it yet. The race is tight like a too small, two-piece bathing suit. When you left CBS, did you think you'd ever anchor your own show again? Well, let's listen to this.
To each of you, courage. For the CBS Evening News, Dan Rather reporting. Good night.
Most people with a career like yours would be happy to rest on their laurels at 75. So why are you doing the show?
Well, first of all, I appreciate the compliment. I'm not sure I have very many laurels to rest on. But the answer is fairly simple. I have a passion for news. I have had since I was 4 or 5 years old. Why that is, I've never been certain. It may be because my mother and father were both voracious newspaper readers. But all I ever dreamed about was being a reporter. And I have a great passion for what I do. I love to work, and I love this work, that is, reporting. And I have my health, and I've always said that as long as I have my health, I want to be reporting somewhere. That there are a lot of other things I want to do with my life, and I do. I love to fish. I love to walk in the woods with my wife. Love to read. But I think my best work could be ahead of me, and so I've embraced that challenge, that I have no illusions, that I'm very lucky at age 75 and to have been in broadcast journalism for more than 55 years to be able to have a challenge to embrace.
Well, there always are cynics. Entertainment Weekly has billed your new show as, an opportunity for you to stick it to the man at CBS.
Well, I don't think it is an opportunity to do that. I certainly don't see it that way, and I don't go around thinking about how to, quote, stick it to the man at CBS or anywhere else for that matter. That I had 44-plus really good years at CBS, 24 years in the anchor chair, and I have nothing but great respect for the people there.
How did you meet Mark Cuban, who founded HDNet with Philip Garvin? I mean, he's best known as the owner of the Dallas Mavericks basketball team.
Well, and that's the only way that I knew of him. I had never met him before, I think, very late February of this year. I had seen him on television at the Mavericks games. He owns the Dallas Mavericks team, where he is courtside and, I think by his own acknowledgement, often lets the little boy out. But
he's rather vocal in his support of his team.
But when it became obvious, even to me, when I say even to me, there were people saying it well before I recognized it, but it became obvious to me that I might have to leave CBS News, that I began thinking about what I would want to do if indeed I had to leave. And when I thought about it, among the things I thought is I would like to find the 21st century equivalent of William S. Paley, Bill Paley, who founded CBS and CBS News in the early 30s. I wanted to find the modern equivalent of Paley or perhaps Ted Turner in the late 1970s. That is, someone who owned an entity entirely themselves. Mr. Paley later took the company public, of course, but when he started, he owned the whole thing. And someone who had a sense of journalism and journalistic enterprises as a public trust. And when I discussed that with a mutual friend of mine, and he said, so well, that being the case, you probably ought to meet Mark Cuban. And said this interlocutor. He said, I'm not sure that Mark Cuban is a Bill Paley or a Ted Turner, but he may be the closest you will find to that. And so, as they would say on the West Coast, I took a meeting with him in Dallas. And I was pleasantly surprised that there was none of the basketball Mark Cuban, that is, the antics at all. He was all business. He's very direct. My seat had no sooner hit the chair than he said, what do you want to do? And I was a little taken aback by that, to tell you the truth, because I rather thought that this was just a get acquainted meeting. And in response to him, I outlined a couple of things that I would like to do, in-depth interviews being one, investigative reports being another. And he just quickly looked me right in the eye and said, well, I can do that. Let's do it. And I said, well, whoa, since we were in Texas, whoa, I'm not really at that point yet. And he said something along the lines, well, from where I sit, it looks to me like probably sooner as opposed to later. And from that conversation, we had a number of other conversations, both in person and on the telephone. And he said something that when he first said it, I was a little bit skeptical, but said, well, if he's prepared to deliver that, I could get really interested. What he said was, he said, I will grant you complete, total, absolute editorial and creative control. And you will not have to worry about ratings or demographics or advertising, nor will you have to worry about a large corporate conglomerate entity being in conflict sometimes with the best of journalism. When he said that, in my mind, the deal was virtually sealed then. I said to myself, if he's willing to put that in a contract, I could get behind that, and I did.
Had you watched HDNet? I know he had Peter Arnett cover the invasion of Afghanistan, but HDNet is only available to people with high-definition television sets, and not everyone can get it. This could be an expensive operation for a very limited audience.
Well, all of that is true. It is an expensive operation for what is now a limited audience. That high-definition television is in its infancy. Fairly soon, I think very soon, virtually everybody is going to own a high-definition television set.
I think by law, in fact.
Well, that's true. By 2009, all sets manufactured and perhaps sold in this country will have to be HD. But it's a little akin to the revolution we went through from black and white television to color television. It's not identical, but it's that vein. It is a small audience compared to the audience that I and CBS had when I was at CBS. It's very small. And right now, it's not all that easily accessible, although it's easier than people think, and perhaps we can talk about that. But what interests me about it, what's exciting about it, also what's daunting about it, is that for the first time in my career, as Mark Cuban said to me, Dan, you don't have to worry about the quantity of the audience. What I want you to be concerned about is the quality of the work.
Now, that's the way CBS got started, at least by in the legend, the Bill Paley legend. They're not totally true. After all, Edward R. Murrow was cut off at the knees after the McCarthy business, despite the fact that a movie made him into the hero and Paley into the man who let him be a hero. But generally, it was considered that news came first and profits came later in the old CBS. And that all changed at some time. And you came on board around the time when that transition was occurring. Were there a lot of pressures on you to keep the ratings high and to come up with gimmicks and things?
Not initially. And we could spend the rest of the afternoon talking about the history of electronic journalism and how we got to where we are now. But I think it's important to understand that William S. Paley, like Ted Turner and like Mark Cuban, they're all interested in profit. They ran businesses, and Mark Cuban still does run a business. But this was the difference. For many years, I would say probably up to sometime in the late to mid-1970s, that Bill Paley and CBS viewed news as principally a public service, not as a profit center. That Mr. Paley did not expect it to make a profit. When he first started, he thought it was a good way to draw additional listeners to his radio network, and that would, the cumulative effect of that would be to make money. But this is the core point, that news was seen as a public service. I was taught, and I know because I knew him fairly well, that Bill Paley believed that a public journal is a public trust. And Mr. Paley was emotionally involved in the responsibilities of that trust. As you have pointed out, he wasn't perfect. He would have preferred, and said so, that Ed Burrow not do a program such as his landmark broadcast taking on Senator Joe McCarthy. However, and this is so important, I think, that even though Mr. Paley would prefer that Murrow not do it, he told Murrow he would prefer not to do it, in the end, he backed it, and he backed it up. When Murrow was attacked, Mr. Paley supported him. Now, it is true, after that, and it wasn't too long after that, Murrow's star began to fade with Mr. Paley because there were others in the corporation who were saying to Mr. Paley, listen, you just can't support this kind of stuff. But in the same way, I think, with Ted Turner, that when he started CNN, he started it because he wanted to be a public service. Now we come up to today. Virtually all of that has been drained out of electronic journalism.
So when you were attacked, you were not supported by the CBS Corporation in the way that Paley might have?
you mark the pause, I suppose.
Were you trying to say the diplomatic thing?
But the straight answer to that is no, that I wasn't in the end backed in the way that I believed our work deserved. However, in fairness, they had a different view, and I can see where some people would agree with their view. But in the end, the answer was no. And this is an increasing problem for electronic journalists. I think it's an increasing problem for journalists, period, including print, that the imperatives of the corporate entity frequently come in conflict with the imperatives of good journalism.
We're seeing that with the Los Angeles Times now.
A good example, if you will. And sometimes it has to do with bottom-line profits and increasing stockholder value. Sometimes it has to do with the fact, and while it's an unpleasant fact, it is a fact, that about five super corporations own roughly 85% of the major media outlets. These are not bad people who run these affairs, but they are business people who increasingly do not see news in any way as a public service. They have, because of the size and breadth of their international corporatizing, they have, for example, legislative and regulatory needs in Washington. They help finance political campaigns that they hope and believe, and in fact has happened, will further their interest in Washington. So if a journalist or a journalistic enterprise working for one of these corporations tries to question in-depth power or dig deeply behind what appears to be to find out what's really going on, I don't agree with it, but I understand that the people who lead these huge corporations get very nervous about that. And I think it's led to a couple of things. First of all, you will note, I hope with interest, that investigative reporting has gone badly out of fashion.
You would have thought after Watergate it would have really become the norm. Instead, it went into decline after that.
Well, it was a short period after Watergate, but I think it did come back into fashion. But by the time we got through the 1980s, certainly by the time we got through the 80s, it was already falling out of fashion, and it's fallen increasingly out of fashion. For one thing, it takes more money. It takes more time. But, and this is something, forgive me if you must, that I think is important for the public to understand. It also leads to these conflicts I mentioned before that have to do with the very essence of what good journalism is, that they don't want controversy. And if you question power, if you put on the air or in print things that make power uncomfortable, the leadership of whatever party or ideological persuasion, there's blowback. It creates controversy. And the leaders of these large corporations don't want that. And so it has led to a diminution of the kind of grit-in-your-gut reporting, which I think the public and the republic need. And beyond that, it has also led to a diminution of standards that we all know, and I do not accept myself from this criticism, that American journalism in general, and I would say particularly electronic journalism, has been in an accelerated period of entertainment values overwhelming news values. That leads to, with the news, dumbing it down, tarting it up, sleazing it up, going for more celebrity kind of coverage, light, soft features as opposed to hard news. I disagree with that as a business model. I personally believe that those who think that such things increase ratings and demographics over the long haul are wrong. However, they are in the ascendancy, and their argument is now carrying the day.
My guest is Dan Rather, who is launching a new news program on HDNet called Dan Rather Reports tomorrow night at 8 p.m. We will continue our conversation after this. Thank you.
number of people who love and care about me said, listen, Dan, don't take it. The first person after Cronkite is going to get his or her head blown off. And in some ways I did. I never hesitated. I considered it a high honor and a great challenge.
That was Dan Rather, of course, talking about replacing Walter Cronkite as the anchor of the CBS Nightly News. What was it called? Just called CBS News or CBS?
CBS Evening News.
Evening News. We're going through another transition these days. We've just lost some members of the old guard, Peter Jennings and then Ed Bradley just 2 days ago. Mike Wallace and Tom Brokaw have retired. You are doing this new thing, but we're seeing a whole new generation, and what you were just talking about, to some degree, is what people are concerned about, the tarting up of the news as a result. The old days, it was, I guess most of those people represented the idea that if you did the best news possible, didn't worry about profits, then that would raise all of the rest of the shows on the station. People would watch because they trusted the news, and then they would want to watch the sitcoms. So why is that thinking gone out the window?
I'm not sure I know the answer to that. What I believe, the things that have contributed to it include, one, the vast increase in the largeness of the individual corporations that own our major media outlets, the tremendous increase in the size of the competitive arena, with the advent of cable in roughly 1979, 80, 81, and satellite, that there's so many more stations and outlets that run news programs or, in some cases, what I consider to be fake news programs, that is, programs posing as newscasts but are really entertainment programs or just people in a studio just bloviating. But all of those are factors that come into play. But I would say the biggest difference is the emergence of news divisions in some of the largest corporations as being seen as profit centers. Until about the mid or late 1970s, news was not expected to make a profit, certainly not considered a profit center. But when 60 Minutes became the number one show in all television, not just for news, those who were running the network said, hey, you know what? News can make money, and it can make big money. And I admire 60 Minutes greatly, past and present. And the loss of Ed Bradley is a tremendous loss to American journalism, to CBS News, and to 60 Minutes. But that once news operations began to be seen by the corporate top as potential big money makers, then the dynamics begin to change greatly. And here we are in the first part of the 21st century when anybody who anchors a major network news broadcast, either off the airways or on satellite or cable, they are, I think the word is not too strong to use, they're a slave to ratings and demographics.
My guest is Dan Rather. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, you've said that this show, we're a startup, a work in progress. Don't expect perfection. We'll just stumble along the way. That's possible when you're not going for a huge audience. But there seems to me to be a major change in another way in audience. I have a friend who teaches a journalism course. She asked her students, where do you get your news? And they all said, from the internet, every one of them. And they were much more likely to have watched The Daily Show than to have watched any of the network news shows. Something is changing. The thing that you did on election night, midtacular, had an audience of around 2 million people. Compare that with the networks, the big networks, and it is seriously competitive.
It is seriously competitive, and how ironic it is, isn't it, that Jon Stewart, Colbert, and the others, they say time and again, and they mean it, look, we are not a news program. Ours is a comedy program. My analysis, for whatever it may be worth, about that is that young people are smart and sophisticated in the best sense of the word, far more so than most people give them credit for being. And they, and if I'm going to judge much of the audience at large, are looking for hard truths. And the comedy of the sort that Jon Stewart and Colbert put out contains in the humor more hard truths than the overwhelming number of news programs on the air. And young people have gotten onto that.
In fact, Maureen Dowd pointed out in Rolling Stone magazine that a recent Indiana University study found that The Daily Show was just as substantive as network television news during the 2004 election, which is kind of shocking. But when we look at the ratings of the three major networks, 31.4 million watched this coverage, more than the previous election, which is interesting, and up 20% from the last midterm election, 2002. Right. ABC was the clear winner, 9.7 million voters. CBS was last at 6.3 million. And CNN did better than Fox.
Well, none of that is surprising. First of all, let me loop back and say that I think one reason the audience was much higher for this midterm election than the previous midterm election is that this was not just another midterm election. I think a case can be made that it was potentially the most important midterm election that we've had since perhaps the Civil War, but certainly one of the more important midterm elections. And again, the audience as a whole meets what I said about young people earlier. It's much more sophisticated, much more knowledgeable. They know when the big chips are on the line for the country. And they sensed that in this last election. It's one reason I think the voting as a whole was up some, and the audience was up some.
Do you think you can connect to those younger viewers? HD is the wave of the future, and there is something wonderful about seeing the news in that much detail on a wide screen, but you're 75 years old. Jon Stewart is in his 30s?
I would think so, maybe late 30s. Well, the answer to your question is I hope so, connecting with younger people. Through the 24 years that I did the CBS Evening News, I thought in the context of an evening news broadcast that we, CBS, and I did a pretty good job of connecting with young people. But I don't think there's any doubt that young people are searching for some place where the news is relevant to them. And relevancy is a big problem for those news outlets that are constantly struggling to get the largest mass audience. And this comedy of the sort that The Daily Show does cuts through a lot of the mush and fog and mist of the news, and it also doesn't clutter itself up with soft features. You could say, well, the whole program is soft because it's comedy. But I think that misses the point, that they deal with the important subjects of the day. And so often with evening news broadcasts and other broadcasts on cable and over the airways, as I said before, increasingly they get more entertainment-oriented and more celebrity-presenting conscious in this ever more desperate reach for a larger audience and better demographics. Now, clearly, there's irony in this, that the outfits that were previously, quote, serious journalist enterprises are moving more in the direction of entertainment, and the entertainment programs, such as The Daily Show, are moving more in the direction of news. What to make of that, better heads than mine would have to figure out.
I've heard a number of people in the business complain that stories would get short shrift if there were no pictures, even if they were major stories. I'm assuming that with high-definition images, being able to really give us a sense of what's going on, you're going to be even more of a slave to that than people were in the past.
No, I don't think so, because that's not our mission, as given by Mark Cuban, who owns the whole thing. And I want to say this gently, but sweep my mind about it, that because Mark Cuban owns HDNet lock, stock, and barrel, He doesn't have to worry about stockholder value. That's one reason he doesn't worry about ratings or demographics, or for that matter, advertising is a different business model.
So there's going to be no advertising on your show?
I wouldn't say no advertising, but advertising is not where they intend to make their money. They have a different business model. They've never said it to me directly, but I think their business model is more on the order of HBO or Showtime. But I do want to address your point that top quality high definition television, keeping in mind there are differences in high def that you get. Mark Cuban is a fanatic about quality. Therefore, he puts on HDNet the best high-definition picture. It's more vivid, it's clearer, it's sharper, detail stands out much more, and it has much better depth. Now, your question is a fair one. You say, well, you say that. That makes the picture even more dominant than it's ever been. I would say on Dan Rather Reports on HDNet, that's not going to be the case because our challenge, the one we've embraced, is to wed the best of journalism and to experiment with new ways to supplement the picture and give people, now they will get the best picture available and the highest ideals and standards in journalism wedded to that. I think over as the years go by, it will become, if not dominant in news, certainly prominent. But I have no illusions. We're starting with a small audience, and we're starting a new program. We'll learn as we go, and I hope we'll get better as we go.
Do you worry that your old critics will detect a liberal bias in your new show? Did you ever wonder why they even saw that liberal bias? I've known you for years. We've talked about things, and I never thought you were a flaming liberal.
Well, thank you for that.
I didn't see you going to Air America after you left CBS.
No. Well, let me answer the first question first. And you said, will the old critics trot that out? I have no doubt that they will. I'm sometimes reminded as one gets a little older, it is true that your friends drift away and your enemies accumulate. And because I have always been determined to be an independent reporter with a capital I, and yes, fiercely independent when I thought it was called upon, that people, and there are people, who want you to report the news their way and no other way, some of them take the view, either you report the news the way I want it reported, or we, with a partisan political agenda or ideological agenda, or we will start calling your names and we will stick a tag on you that will be negative. So I do expect the old critics to be out, but, you know, I didn't just waddle off the watermelon wagon. I do understand.
There you go again.
That, you know, I understand. As to the second, about why, particularly in recent years, particularly when I did the Evening News, that people with a partisan political agenda and or a set dogmatic ideological frame of mind, you know, why was it Dan Rather? Why was it CBS? I do think there's a reason for that. And in short, we have a history. CBS News has a much longer history than I do.
So Edward R. Murrow, to some degree, was haunting you.
Look at the record. Football coaches, I'm told, are fond of saying, you are what your record is. And I believe professionally that's true, both for an organization such as CBS and as an individual reporter such as myself. So look at the record. Edward R. Murrow took on Senator Joseph McCarthy at a time when it was a very unpopular thing to do. He did the landmark documentary Harvest of Shame, which pointed out how immigrant workers are exploited, collecting our food. CBS News practically franchised in the early going and led all the way through in coverage of the civil rights movement. It's sometimes a little easy to forget how controversial that was at the time. CBS News led in that coverage, and it was my, I've always considered an honor and a privilege and part of my education that I was assigned when I first came to CBS News to cover Dr. Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement. And you know, I'm proud of what CBS did with that. But there were people who felt really strongly about institutionalized racism who never forgot it. Then with the Vietnam War, once again, CBS News, very controversial war, CBS News practically franchised the story. By acclamation, had the best coverage of the Vietnam War. I was in Vietnam, four times, I think. One time for a year, almost a year straight through. Then came the presidency of Richard M. Nixon, the only president in the history of the country to resign, and he did so. It still catches in my throat a little. I hate so much to say it, but it's a hard fact. The only president to resign as a, quote, unindicted co-conspirator in a widespread criminal conspiracy which he had led. So CBS led on those stories. I was involved on point covering those stories. And so the enemies accumulated.
Well, let's hope that you don't get any more enemies. Or maybe it'll be a compliment if you do with this new show, Dan Rather Reports, which premieres tomorrow night at 8 p.m. on HDNet, which is in the 700s on Time Warner. And
I'm glad you raised it, that if you have a high-definition television set, you can receive us on by satellite on number 79, that's DirecTV satellite, or on the Dish Network 9422. On Time Warner Cable in this market, we're at 724 on your dial.
And do we have a cable vision?
Don't have a cable vision per se as yet. We're always hoping.
Thank you so much, Dan Rather, for being with us again.
Thank you for having me. Good to see you again.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.